Well, that chant that we sang this morning, Om Namah Shivaya, is actually a Hindu chant that is used in meditation. And I did some research also, and what I found is, one thing is they call that chant sound therapy for the body and nectar for the soul. That it is a mantra calling in our higher self or our divine self, that divine within us, calling that forward. It is also a calling on Shiva, who is the goddess destroyer, and is calling on that destruction deity to aid in the destruction of our ego so that our higher self, our essential nature, may come forward. And so Elizabeth Gilbert, in her book Eat, Pray, Love, talks about when she is on that aspect of her journey, that is the first mantra that she is taught. And she says, in today's vernacular, it means, I honor the divinity within me. Isn't that just lovely? And isn't that just nectar for the soul? As human beings, we have this deep need to experience the divine, to experience our own divinity and our essence that is one and the same as that infinite one. We have this longing within us to feel and to know and to sense and to experience that one infinite presence. To feel it within ourselves and to experience it as being a part of our lives and being where we are. And so religions throughout eons of time have been born out of that need, been born out of that longing to commune with that infinite presence, to experience it and to know it. And if you look at the different world religions, that mystical aspect of each and every single one of them has that same one truth that the mystical aspect of the religions teach, and that is that there is one that is everywhere present, that one is always right where we are, and that one is ultimate reality rather than this world of illusion that we see here, that one is the reality. And so Ernest Holmes, the founder of this philosophy, says, always pressing against the gateway of consciousness, seeking admission is that which forevermore sings the song of its own wholeness, forever embracing us. Always pressing against the gateway of consciousness, seeking admission is that which forevermore sings the song of its own wholeness, forever embracing us. That, to me, seems like nectar for the soul, that which sings its song throughout this universe and throughout each one of us. That, reading that, to me, stirs a hunger within me to feel that presence and to know that presence and to live in an awareness that, yes, that presence is always right where I am. It stirs that hunger within me to remember that I live within that one and that one lives within me. And so that, to me, is one of the reasons that this philosophy is so appealing to me, and I think to many people, is because we teach in the omnipresence of spirit. We teach that one is present everywhere, all the time, in and through everything. We teach that there is only one power and one presence and one life and one beingness, and that it pervades everything. That is the simple fact, and that is the foundation that we stand upon. Not just does it permeate everything, but that it expresses as everything, that it is in and through, around, and as everything in this manifest universe. Closer than breath and nearer than hands and feet is that infinite one. It permeates us, and it permeates whatever the situation that we are in, no matter what it is. It fills our life because it is our life. Split a piece of wood, and I am there. Lift a stone, and I am there also. That is from the Gospel of Thomas, one of my favorite pieces of scripture. So that is mystical awareness. And in that, we are a mystical tradition, Centers for Spiritual Living and Science of Mind, because we teach in that oneness. We teach that there is only one. We teach that there is one, but it's like a prism. If you imagine a prism and the light shining through the prism creates all these different colors, we, each one of us, is one of those colors. Everything in this universe is one of those colors, yet it's that same light that is shining as each one of those colors. Still connected to that source of light, those emanations, still one with that light, still filled with that light, still a part of that light, yet each one of those colors is unique. Just as we are each unique, and we are each unique in the way that we bring our light, that light of the divine shining through us into this world. And so, that belief that there is only one, that it permeates everything and expresses within everything, yet is never absorbed by creation because it is also greater than everything that is manifest, is called panentheism. And so we are a panentheistic philosophy. Hinduism is a panentheistic philosophy. And I love the way they speak of that one presence. Hinduism says, there is one all-pervading, indestructible presence in the universe, which is everywhere present. It is called Brahman. It is the one universal being that cannot be seen with the naked eye, but can only be experienced. It is said that Brahman created the world out of itself by becoming all. Just like that prism, by becoming all of those colors of light. Hinduism also says Brahman is Atman, and Atman is Brahman. That means that one infinite source, that one consciousness, that one presence is the soul, is the essence of who we are, and that that soul and that essence and our core nature is that infinite one, that they are one and the same. That is exactly what we teach. So I wonder, is that one of the places that Ernest Holmes got that idea? Because you know he studied all the world's major religions and philosophers and developed a philosophy that had the common thread that runs through all of them, which is what the science of mind is. The problem is, though, is that when we are looking through our ego self, and through those human everyday eyes, is that we see ourselves from an ego perspective as being separate and apart from everything, as separate and distinct, and that we are somehow outside of God, and that God is somehow outside of us. But really, that idea that we are outside of God and that God is outside of us is really an old idea. Perhaps, and probably one that every single person in this room was taught as a child, that God is somewhere out there in the sky and we are over here, separate. And what I find is that sometimes just using that word, God, conjures up that exact idea, that God is something out there in the sky, separate and apart from us, that man up there who holds us in judgment, who is watching what we do to see if we make mistakes, and then will punish us. Or, if maybe that's not part of your paradigm to be punished, at least withhold the good from you. So, that is very different than looking at that one as a divine presence that permeates everything. Very different than seeing that one infinite one is the very activity of love and the activity of peace, the activity of goodness, that it's nature, that presence, nature is peace and beauty and balance and order and the good itself. That it is a life force energy that is the infinite intelligence that permeates everything. The intelligence that expresses within every single cell in your body, within every single plant and animal and everything that exists. instead of seeing it as the perfect order that is orchestrating the blood flowing through your body, that is orchestrating the fact that the food you ate for breakfast is now being turned into bone and tissue. The fact that there is an order that is holding the planets in their orbits and acting as a migratory impulse in animals and how to get where it is they're going. That is very different than thinking God is something separate and outside of us. Because it permeates all and surrounds all like a fish lives in water. We are immersed in that. And that same water that the fish swims in is also inside of that fish. It's one and the same. That's what the divine is. We live in that and it lives in us. And so I think it's really important then to be aware of the words that we use to refer to that presence, to refer to that one. And so we started class this week, and we talked about that. We started foundations class. We talked about ideas or names that we have heard that refer to that infinite one. And we talked about how those different words carry a vibration with them. And not just do they carry a vibration with them, but we have a subconscious and an emotional reaction to different words. You're going to have a different reaction to the word God, perhaps, than you do to the word light. You have a response inside of you, what that feels like and what it means. And so in class, we talked about some of those words. Words like Yahweh and Jehovah and Father or Father, Mother, God. Those words, to me, speak of separateness. That is separate from us. Another word that is an old word, yet doesn't really speak of that separation so much that we came up was the holiest of holy. That doesn't feel like a being person out there. It feels like an energy and a way of being in the world. We came up with words like the presence, or the one, or the light, or truth, the divine, I am, the I am presence. That feels very different to me than saying God. And at the same time, I have been in this philosophy long enough where God has come to mean those things to me, but I still think it's really important to pay attention to what does this evoke in me, this word, and is that the word I want to use to evoke what I'm feeling, or would something better create a feeling inside of me that I would like to live from? So it's important how we refer to it, because how we refer to it creates the experience that we have of it. What we name it, the word name actually means nature. And so what we name it then creates what the nature part aspect that we experience. If you call it the light, the nature of light is different than the nature of love, and therefore you're going to have a different experience inside of you. So what we call it determines our experience. And so I'd like to share a story with you. It goes like this. When quite young, Paul's father had one of the first telephones in the neighborhood. Paul was too little to reach the telephone, but used to listen with fascination when his mother talked into it. Then Paul discovered that somewhere inside this wonderful device lived an amazing person. Her name was Information, Please. And there was nothing she did not know. Information, Please could supply anybody's number and the correct time. Paul's first personal experience with this genie in the bottle came one day when his mother was visiting a neighbor. Amusing himself at the tool bench in the basement, Paul hacked his finger with a hammer. The pain was terrible, but there didn't seem to be any reason in crying because there was no one home to give him any sympathy. He walked around the house, sucking his throbbing finger, finally arriving at the stairway. The telephone! Quickly, Paul ran for the footstool in the parlor and dragged it to the landing. Climbing up, he unhooked the receiver in the parlor and held it to his ear. "Information, please," he said into the mouthpiece just above his head. A click or two and a small, clear voice spoke into Paul's ear. "Information? I hurt my finger," Paul wailed into the phone. Isn't your mother home? Came the question. Nobody's home but me, Paul blubbered. Are you bleeding? The voice asked. No, he replied. I hit my finger with a hammer and it hurts. Can you open the ice box? She asked. He said he could. Then chip off a little piece of ice and hold it to your finger, said the voice. After that, Paul called information, please, for everything. He asked for her help with his geography, and she told him where Philadelphia was. She helped him with his math. She told Paul that his pet chipmunk, which he had caught in the park just the day before, would eat fruit and nuts. Then there was the time Petey, the pet canary, died. Paul called her and told her the sad story. She listened. Then she said the usual things grown-ups say to soothe the child. But Paul was inconsolable. He asked her, why is it that birds should sing so beautifully and bring joy to all families only to end up in a heap of feathers at the bottom of the cage? She must have sensed his deep concern, for she said quietly, Paul, always remember that there are other worlds to sing in. Somehow he felt better. When Paul was 9 years old, his family moved across the country to Boston. Paul missed his friend very much. Information, please. She belonged in that old wooden box back home, and he somehow never thought about trying the tall, shiny new phone that sat on the table in the hall. As he grew into his teens, the memories of those childhood conversations never really left him. Often, in moments of doubt and perplexity, Paul would recall the serene sense of security he had then. He appreciated how patient, understanding, and kind she was to have spent her time on a little boy. A few years later, on his way to West College, Paul's plane put down in Seattle. He had about a half an hour or so in between planes. He spent 15 minutes on his phone with his sister, who lived there now. Then, without thinking what he was doing, Paul dialed his hometown operator and asked and said, information, please. Miraculously, he heard the small, clear voice he knew so well. Information, she said. He hadn't planned this, but heard himself saying, could you please tell me how to spell fix? There was a long pause. Then came the soft-spoken answer. I guess your finger must be healed by now. Paul laughed. So it really is you, he said. I wonder if you have any idea how much you meant to me during that time. I wonder, she said, if you know how much your calls meant to me. I never had any children. I used to look forward to your calls. Paul told her again how often he thought of her over the years and asked if he could call her again when he came back to visit his sister. Please do, she said. Ask for Sally. 3 months later, Paul was back in Seattle. A different voice answered information. He asked for Sally. Are you a friend? The person on the other end of the phone said. Yes, a very old friend, Paul answered. I'm sorry to have to tell you this, she said. Sally has been working part-time the last few years because she was sick. She died 5 weeks ago. Before he could hang up, she said, the person on the other end of the phone, wait a minute, is this Paul? Yes, Paul replied. Well, Sally left you a message. She wrote it down in case you called. Let me read it to you. The note said, tell him I still say there are other worlds to sing in. He'll know what I mean. That is God in action. That is that infinite presence of love and wisdom and good expressing itself in his life as a boy. But we only see that if we look for it. And we only see that if that's how we name it. We don't see it if we name it as something that is separate and distinct and apart from us. The allness of that infinite presence always fills our life. It is always wherever we go, in whatever we are doing, in and through everything. Ready to flow into our experience when we recognize it. But we have to recognize it and know that it's present in order to create the opening for it to flow into our lives. Because the truth is, God does not ever leave us. We leave God when we don't believe, when we don't look for, when we don't name it like the things that are coming into our lives. But it's us who creates that separation, not God. And so Ernest Holmes in the Science of Mind textbook says, intuitively, we sense that every man in his native state is some part or manifestation of this eternal principle. And the entire problem of limitation, evil, suffering, and uncertainty is not God-ordained, but is the result of ignorance. It has been written that the truth shall make us free, provided we know the truth. The truth is that that infinite one is always right here, that it carries us. It leads us, it guides us, it flows into our life as the things that we need, as the strength and as the courage and as the fortitude and as the creativity and the ideas and the wholeness and the order, all of those things when we know that it's present. And so my invitation to you is to pay attention what you call that infinite one. Pay attention to what words or names stir something within you that makes you aware that that presence is right where you are, that make you aware that that infinite one fills everything with its beingness. If you call it love, what if you call it eternal being? What if you call it pure potential? What if you call it life? Look for the words that suit you, and it's possible that different words are going to work in different situations and at different times. But find the words that feed you and lift you and fill you up. Words that enable you to perceive it in that moment. And then begin looking for it. Look for it all around you, everywhere you go and everything you do. How and where do you see it? How and where do you see love? In that mother and that child playing at the park? In those friends having lunch with each other? In that person holding the door open for someone they don't know or carrying someone's groceries to their car? How do you see life expressing? In the trees and in the flowers and in the birds flying through the air? How is it that you see that intelligence expressing? Like I said, in that migration that's happening? In the fact that you cut your arm and it heals itself? In the fact that you know what to do when you know to do it? How do you see good expressing itself? Through this congregation? Look for it everywhere you go. Oh yeah, that's it. And so I have a quote from Joel Goldsmith. He says, there is only one way to overcome a sense of separation from God, and that is to acknowledge the activity and presence of God where you are. That's how we know we're not separate. Acknowledge its presence where you are. And as a result, you'll be living with a greater experience of the divine in your life. You will be living with greater access to the good because you'll already know that it's there and that invites it in. You'll be living with greater faith that the activity of that one is working in your life. And because of all those things, you'll be experiencing greater peace and more love and greater financial abundance and greater health and more good in every single area of your life, because that is the activity of the divine. And so blessings to all of you as you walk this path and as you discover that divine presence in your own life in more and more ways, and give yourself the gift of living in this presence and bringing it into the world through you. Thank you so much. Blessings to you. And so I invite you to join me in a spiritual mind treatment. How good it is to be answering this call to prayer, this call that we always have within us that beckons us to return home to that one infinite presence that lives right at the center of our being, that one infinite presence that fills all of time and all of space with its essence, with its good, with its infinite potential and its love and its peace and its boundlessness. For this is the presence that we live in. And I see it everywhere that I look, in the trees and in the sunshine and in the birds and in the faces of strangers and loved ones. I see it everywhere I go, inside of me as inspiration and the knowingness of truth, and my connection with life and this world and nature. How good it is to be aware of this one that I live and move and have my beingness within, recognizing that it too lives and moves and has its beingness by means of each and every one of us in this room and by means of everything on this planet. For everything is a part and an aspect of this one. And so today I know that the allness of God is right where we are, that as we lean into it, it leans into us and turns to us and flows into our life, meeting the exact need that we have. That all that we could desire is already ours, for it is the good pleasure of life. It is the nature of life to unfold itself in its bounty, in its glory, in its magnificence. And so today, I name that presence magnificence, and I see it everywhere. And so it is with a full and grateful heart that I say thank you, magnificence, for this life and for this unfolding good. And so I speak this word knowing that this is not just true for us, but it is true for every single person on this planet. Magnificence is unfolding in the life of everyone, for this is the life that we are living. I speak this word about every single decision maker and policy maker right now, knowing that magnificence is unfolding itself as perfect decisions, as creating a world that works for everyone, where we all flourish and thrive and unfold the divine through us. And so I say thank you, magnificence, for all of this. And I release this prayer into that creative womb of the universe, knowing that it is already done and unfolding itself now. It is done because it is the truth. And so I release this, and I let it be, and I say, and so it is. Amen.